This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
I'm joyful and fun.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2.
That's cool, man!
On 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
A very active trade deadline. We're getting word that DJ LeMahieu has a triceps issue and Gio Urshela has a hamstring issue. According to Ricky Ricardo, who does Spanish radio for the Yankees.
He's a great guy.
He is a great guy.
Yeah, but you should rethink Ricky.
Why? Just because of I Love Lucy?
That's right.
Well, so it'd be better if it was Rich Ricardo?
Or Rick.
Or Rick Ricardo.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, who's one of the biggest actors going right now? Was it Michael B. Jordan? Is it B?
Yeah.
Why do you think he throws the B in?
Because he can't legally use Michael Jordan, probably.
Well, he can legally use his own name, but he doesn't want to be confused.
No, but when you're in the business, you can actually, SAG-AFTRA, I think, makes you. That's why it was Michael J. Fox, not because he was somebody who was highfalutin. There was a Michael Fox, yeah, that was an actor.
Huh. Listen, I think Ricky Ricardo does a terrific job, not only with the Yankees, but the Eagles.
Yes.
But he should have went with Rick.
I'll tell him you said that.
Rick Ricardo.
Well, yeah, tell him I said everything.
I will.
You got to include it all, though.
Yeah, include it all. He won't, though.
No, I will. Just like I'll include everything that you say to Paul Olden.
Please, in bold type.
Let's get to more important things.
I like to
okay?
Say
we have one of the greatest of all time waiting on hold. We're not going to have this nonsense go on while he waits. Bob Costas returns to HBO tonight with Back on the Record with Bob Costas, and it is 11 p.m. You could see it, and it's on HBO Max. You could stream it. It's exciting, and he's here with us now, and we love him. Yeah. Hi, Bob.
You know, I don't consider that to be an appreciative enough introduction. Could you start over?
I sure could. He's the greatest of all time. Here yeah. he is, Bob Costas.
He's the GOAT.
Stop. But you know what? As I listened in, I didn't hear the previous hour because we were just finishing up taping the show, which airs tonight, but I, too, was unfamiliar with the Yankees' Spanish-language radio broadcast, so this is the first that I heard that the guy's name is Ricky Ricardo, and I'm sure he's terrific, but for those of us of a certain age, it conjures up a certain image. You know, you figure that his broadcast partner is Fred Mertz.
But you would think, though, Bob, people of our age would know Ricky Ricardo, but somebody who's 20 or 30 would have no idea that Ricky Ricardo is Ricky Ricardo.
Absolutely not. And everything, it seems, if you're around long enough and you've experienced enough, almost everything leads to a story. So you mentioned Michael J. Fox.
Okay.
You want to hear a story that involves Michael J. Fox?
How could we not?
Okay. It starts out in a less than joyous circumstance. It's Muhammad Ali's memorial service 5 years ago in Louisville. And so many people want to attend, they hold it in the arena where the Louisville Cardinals play basketball. It started about an hour and a half after it was supposed to start. And it drew people from all walks of life, including various people with sports backgrounds. So now, waiting for it to start, groups are in little clusters conversing. And I'm in one of those little groups when in walks Don King, in full Don King regalia. The hair is the Don King hair. He's wearing the jeans jacket with the American flag across both the front and the back. He's waving two American flags and beaming despite the solemnity of the occasion. And as he approaches our group, he feels as if he has to provide like a short caption for each person. So he approaches and he says, Mike Tyson, once the most feared man in the ring, Coach Pat Riley, straight off the pages of GQ, Sugar Ray Leonard, not a mark on him, still as beautiful as a child. Katie Couric, America's sweetheart. And then he turns to me and he goes, Michael J. Fox. And now,
wow.
You know, we're sort of roughly the same size, right? So now Katie kind of gently goes, Don, it's Bob Costas. And he's so shameless, without missing a beat, he goes, Bob Costas, greatest commentator in the world.
Wow. Wow.
Didn't even acknowledge the mistake.
That's
no,
amazing.
No, just kept right on plowing through.
That's unbelievable. Fantastic.
All right, so tell us about this show. What is this show about? It's four times a year from what I'm reading. And right. Tonight is the first one. And Bomani Jones is also part of the show.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute. I don't want to retire, but I don't want to work as hard as you're working, doing the radio show and doing the ball games. I want to do an occasional ball game on the Major League Baseball Network, you know, a dozen or so a year. And I wanted to do some stuff on HBO. I loved being on HBO the first time. Happy that they asked me back. It was designed to be quarterly, but then COVID pushed us back a couple of times. So we're going to get the four for 2021 in consecutive months, July through October. And the title of the show tells you we're not reinventing anything. It's Back on the Record. I had the On the Record show that began in 2001 and ran through 2008 on HBO. And then when the Baseball Network came into existence, I really wanted to get back to baseball. And HBO at that time said, we want you to stay, but you can't do both. We need cable exclusivity. Talk about a difficult choice because HBO is a gold standard, but baseball is baseball. So I went to the Baseball Network. Now the landscape has changed, and HBO invited me back. So the idea is long-form interviews, some commentary, entertaining, I hope, but also with some journalistic elements. In the past, we've had non-sports people on, and we will again. First time around, I'm going off the top of my head, Billy Crystal and Jon Stewart and Chris Rock and Jerry Seinfeld, Tom Hanks, Bruce Springsteen, et cetera, et cetera. J-Lo was a guest at one time. So we'll do something like that eventually. But tonight's first show, Charles Barkley, Ali Raisman, whom we booked about a month ago, thinking, well, it's during the Olympics and it'll be timely, becomes even more timely because of the Simone Biles story that broke. And Ali and Simone are very close. And she also talks with a great deal of emotion, but also she's a very bright young woman, Ali Raisman. And the way she expresses herself about what she'll always cherish about gymnastics, but what has, to a certain extent, permanently scarred her, because she was among those abused by Larry Nassar, is pretty arresting stuff. And as we mentioned, Bomani Jones, who some of your audience may be familiar with, some not, but those of us in the business know that Bomani is a really good television performer, provocative. And my whole approach to this is I don't need an echo chamber. I may agree with him sometimes. I may disagree with him sometimes, but he's certain to make an interesting point. So we carve out a little time for him. And then your very own David Cohn is on a panel, along with Renee Montgomery of WNBA fame, who's now a part owner of the Atlanta Dream. So we think we've dotted a lot of I's and crossed a lot of T's for the first show, which is tonight, right after Bill Maher.
You know, Bob, when you brought up Ali Raisman, we were thinking about all the things that have been going on with mental health, with professional athletes. Mm-hmm. And you wonder, a lot of these things are happening because now not only do these athletes have the courage, but there's the outlet now to express that it's too difficult for me to be able to get through this. Do you think we would have lost maybe some moments in the past if, you know, during what Roger Maris was going through, during what Hank Aaron was going through, Jackie Robinson, what they were going through, any pressure moment over the last 50 to 100 years, if we were more fine-tuned with mental health then as we are now, would some of those things not happen?
Yeah, it's certainly a reasonable point, but all the people you mentioned came out of a different point in time, different prevailing sensibilities within the broader culture. And plus, social media is added to all this. Ali makes the point tonight that there was a question asked. No, I'm sorry. Renee Montgomery makes this point. She says they put a question, a serious one, because they thought it was a toss-up. Would you rather hit a game-winning shot? This was to WNBA players. Hit a game-winning buzzer beater or add 20,000 Twitter followers? And some people chose the latter. You know, if you're Simone Biles, who's very, very bright, he's 24 years old, okay? To us, social media, whether we embrace it, disdain it, or something in between, that's something that's been added to the media that we are familiar with. But if you're 24 years old, what happens on Twitter or Instagram may be of more consequence to you than a cover story on Sports Illustrated, in Sports Illustrated, or a thoughtful profile in a major newspaper or magazine. And if that's the case, if that's kind of your go-to, and I'm not saying it is with Simone, but to a certain extent, it certainly is, we know how non-representative of the public as a whole Twitter can be and social media can be. I'm sure there's some value there, but it's also a place of negativity. It's also a place of harsh judgments. It's a place where some people who've never accomplished a thing say nasty things about extremely accomplished people and do so with anonymity. And if you're continually getting that feedback, that can eat at you. But when it comes to Simone, I think there's a distinction between her and Michael Phelps, who's been an advocate for mental health post-swimming career, or even before he acknowledged it, but he's really out front about it now, or Naomi Osaka or people like that. Because with Simone, the first reaction was, well, this falls into the Naomi Osaka category. But now we find out that there's something in gymnastics called the twisties, which is a phrase they use or a word they use for when mentally you're not in sync with the things you're asking your body to do. Mm-hmm. And what Simone Biles is asking her body to do isn't just something that a tiny fraction of 1% can only do. She's the only one who can do it. Even other gymnasts can't do it. And when she was up in the air in the preliminaries, and then in her first attempt, I guess, in the team competition, and we uncharacteristically saw her with an awkward landing and a near stumble, afterwards we found out that wasn't just kind of the normal physical mistake you can make. She's up in the air, and she's disoriented. The sync between mind and body is out of whack. And when you're asking yourself to do that, it isn't just the possibility that you might have points deducted. You could have a catastrophic injury. And it was really that, the twisties, more so than, oh, all the stress, and I'm the cover girl, and I'm carrying the weight of the U.S. Olympic team on my shoulders because I'm the face of it. All that, I'm sure, played into it and might have helped to create that mental disconnect. But what caused her to withdraw was the feeling of being up in the air and not knowing where she was.
Bob, are you missing the Olympic coverage this time around between the Biles story, which has been crazy, and obviously the COVID, there's the storyline with U.S. basketball, or are you just as well to not be doing it?
No, it's behind me. It's been in my rearview mirror for a long time, and I don't say that dismissively. I did a dozen of them, Peter, and when I signed my last real contract with NBC in 2012, I stipulated that 2016 would be the end of my Olympic run. And they said, well, if you want to reconsider, you can always go one at a time. And then I told them in 2015, nope, I'm certain Rio is the last one. I just didn't want to announce it beforehand because I didn't want to make a big deal out of it. So I had been preparing for that for a long time. So I'm, you know, pulling for my colleagues and friends in Tokyo. They're doing the job as best they can under very challenging and unique circumstances. But not once, either in the Winter Games in Pyeongchang in 2018 or now, I haven't even had it cross my mind once, I would have said this, or I would have done that, or I wish I could chime in on this. I'm glad I did it, very glad I did it, and now I'm glad I'm done.
Talking with Bob Costas, his show Back on the Record with Bob Costas debuts tonight, 11 p.m. on HBO. Now, we know you have a love for baseball. Do you remember, Bob, a trade deadline that was this active and this exciting and this many great players exchanging teams?
You know, I may have missed some of what happened today. The last thing I'm aware of that made an impact is Scherzer and Turner to the Dodgers for, as I understand it, their top two prospects. So the Dodgers anteed up. But still, you're talking about the team that is the reigning world champion from the last time they played a complete season. And Scherzer may make some sense, you know, mid-30s toward the end of a big deal. But Trey Turner's a young player in the prime of his career. This is really kind of it's interesting, not just for how it affects the Dodgers and the Nats, but it's interesting for what it might say about baseball going forward.
And you also have Javi Baez was traded to the Mets. Chris Bryant was traded to the Giants. So, and Andrew Heaney was going to the Yankees from the Angels. I know you were very interested in that one. So a lot of players have changed teams.
Well, the Yankees got Rizzo. I knew that, but I did not know, because I was taping until a few minutes ago, I didn't know about Baez and Bryant. I knew that Bryant, Baez, and Rizzo were all on the block. Is Kimbrel still a Cub?
No, Kimbrel was traded to the White Sox.
The White Sox?
Yeah.
So he doesn't
now they
have
three
pack.
great relievers, Hendricks, Kopech, and Kimbrel.
How about that?
Yeah, they're really going for it.
Suddenly the White Sox, I don't know that it'll last because the Cubs fan base is deeper, but for now, the White Sox are Chicago's team.
You know what you need if you're a fan? You need an owner in his 80s, because you know he's going to spend,
yeah,
because he's just not waiting for, you know, the farm system. He's going to go out and get it.
That's right. Jerry Reinsdorf fits that description, and that's why he brought Tony La Russa back. It was controversial, but he wasn't bringing him back for 5 years or to bring a young team along. He was bringing him back for a couple of years to win. And so far, so good.
All right, so I've always wondered this, because people ask me this, and I want to ask you this. So you sit down today, you're hosting Back on the Record. You've done everything in this business, every big event. When you sit down and they're counting you down, do you get nervous or not?
Not nervous, but just a little bit of a twinge of excitement, which is good. It's good. You know, say, hey, I'm back doing this. I'm back at HBO, which I always admired and was happy to be part of. There are some new people there on the crew, but I know a lot of them, producer, director, some of the cameramen and whatnot. So it's like old home week, and it's part of what I do. I like that long-form interview stuff. I like that exchange of ideas, and they give me space to do a commentary. I close with a commentary that will perhaps not please the poobahs of the IOC.
Ooh. Well, we're looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Now, yesterday I had a top 10 HBO scripted shows, and I made it 10 instead of 5 because not so much that there's so many great HBO shows, like, but they're all great. And I didn't even get into like shows like yours or Real Time or Last Week Tonight or Not Necessarily News or this miniseries. It just seems like HBO gets it more than any other network when it just comes to just hitting the right tone on anything that they seem to do. In all the different networks you worked for, is there just some way they go about it that they just seem to get it when it comes to putting together original programming?
Yeah, there's a real devotion to quality there, and that's within their sports productions. You think of the documentaries through the years that Ross Greenberg helmed. You think of, as you said, Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel. It's just top-notch stuff. And one of the things they've always said to me is, it's not enough that the show be good. It has to feel like an HBO show. Mm. It has to feel like something you couldn't get anywhere else. Not that there isn't good stuff anywhere else, but there has to be a kind of sensibility that fits in. And I was happy to come back, and one of the only things I asked for was, since we're only doing 4 shows a year, I always wanted to be on a Friday night immediately after Bill Maher. I'm not comparing myself to Bill. I think he's fantastic. But I think there might be some overlap in sensibility between our audiences. So Bill is my lead-in 4 times a year.
Now, for me, one of the most legendary things you did on that particular show, because Bob, as I've told you now ad nauseum, a fan of many of your vehicles over the years, was the sit-down with Vince McMahon, which as a wrestling aficionado, dare I say it, we all regard that as one of the most interesting Vince McMahon conversations of all time. Would you be interested in revisiting a conversation with now a early 70s Vince McMahon? And furthermore, is there anyone else you'd like to sit down with maybe a second time this time around?
Well, I would definitely, if there was something in the news, let's say they tried to reboot the XFL, I would have Vince on if there was a legitimate news hook there. You know, the first iteration of the XFL, which is where we started in that interview 20 years ago, and he started to get ticked off right away because I was asking him legitimate questions as opposed to the things he's used to, which are scripted things. And he knows that he has, I should say, a reputation for sometimes blowing up at interviewers. He did the same thing with Armin Katayan, who is a very accomplished journalist with CBS and on HBO and various other places, 60 Minutes for a while. You may recall as he slapped the notes out of Armin's hands because he thought the line of questioning was inappropriate, which meant that it was annoying him. So the XFL had begun, and it was one of the colossal failures in the history of television. It got the lowest ratings, at least at that time, of any primetime program in the history of network TV. It opened high, like with a rating of 10 out of a curiosity factor, and then when people saw that it was a combination of kind of low-rent football and the tawdriest sensibility of what was then the WWF, they bolted on him. Okay, so that was the reason why he was on, and things got more and more heated, and if you want to talk more about that, we can. But the second go-round of the XFL, which people may have already forgotten about, was on its way to being very successful until the pandemic derailed it, because they didn't try to impose a WWE sensibility. Right. They just set it up as a high level, like a AAA level minor league football, and they looked for cities that didn't have an NFL franchise. It was doing especially well in St. Louis, twice jilted by the NFL. They were drawing good crowds, and they were getting decent television numbers. You know, now every network, by the way, has its own sports platform. There used to be NBCSN, now it's Peacock. There's the CBS Sports Network, etc. So there's a place to put this stuff. And even if I don't share the obsession, it's pretty clear that there's a hunger for football in this country that will sustain an acceptable cable rating even in the springtime. The Alliance of American Football, Charlie Ebersol's brainchild, was also doing pretty well, but the league was underfinanced, and that's why it folded. But they actually got better numbers when they debuted on regular CBS than NBA playoff games that were on opposite them, early round NBA playoff games. So there's a place for a minor league football operation, could be called the XFL. If Vince wanted to bring it back, I'd have him on the show.
Beautiful. The show should be great, so I have to extend my DVR now from Bill Maher to 11 o'clock for Back on the Record with Bob Costas. You know we wish you only the best of luck. We love you. You're always great with us, so I hope the show is a huge hit.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Don. Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Michael.
You got it. That's Bob Costas. You know what I have here in my hands, guys?
Prediction is a Chinese takeout menu that was slipped under your door.
No.
The Yankee lineup?
Yeah.
I knew it.
Yeah. Nobody can come near my door with menus. It's the Yankee starting lineup. It's brought to you by Bigelow Tea, and it's an interesting one, everybody. We've got Gleyber Torres leading off and playing short. Joey Gallo's in right field batting second. Hitting third, playing center field, Aaron Judge. Cleaning up is the first baseman, Anthony Rizzo. The number five hitter is the left fielder, Giancarlo Stanton.
Woo!
Batting six, playing second base, Rougned Odor. Batting seven, the catcher, Gary Sanchez. Batting eighth, the third baseman, Tyler Wade. And batting ninth and pitching, Jameson Taillon. Now, if you just joined us, DJ LeMahieu, triceps issue, he's day-to-day. Urshela, hamstring issue, day-to-day. Yankees also DFA'd Ryan Lamar, and they optioned Albert Abreu back to Scranton. That's tonight's Yankee starting lineup against the Marlins, brought to you by Bigelow Tea. Bigelow Tea is a proud supporter of the Michael K. Show and the official hot tea of Joe Torre and the New York Yankees. Just saw a small video on Twitter of Jeter, the owner of the Marlins, standing with Mattingly, the manager of the Marlins, standing with Judge. And a lot of Yankee fans are commenting, three Yankee captains. I don't think they would make Judge a captain unless they sign him to a long-term deal. But I would think that would be the natural extension if he signs a long-term deal. You agree?
It only obviously now wouldn't be the time, so we'll find out. That would be the moment, though, right?
Yep.
He re-signs, and then they also throw that in?
Yep. Absolutely. I've got something to tell you. Oh, yeah. Don't miss your chance to see the world's top-ranked PGA Tour players in action when they return to Liberty National Golf Club for the Northern Trust, the first event in golf's season-ending FedEx Cup playoffs. It's held August 18th to the 22nd in Jersey City, New Jersey. We've been there. It's beautiful. Secure your tickets at thenortherntrust.com and be listening to On the Tee with Anita Marks this Sunday at 8 a.m. for a chance to score a pair of tickets and see big names like Dustin Johnson, Patrick Reed, Bryson DeChambeau, and many more. It's going to be the can't-miss event of the summer. All right, a lot of stuff to talk about. 1-800-919-3776. Don, very quickly before we go to break, Has Carlin been allowed out of the basement yet? Will we talk to him?
Well, I spoke with him last night. Everything's good.
See, I just texted him. You took it the next step, didn't you?
No, I texted him.
Oh, so you didn't talk to him?
Well, we talked via text.
No. You texted, so you lied.
I didn't lie, but I don't think I represented it well.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
We told you about the deal for Javi Baez. Bob Nightingale of USA Today is reporting. I'll tell you what, Don, they blinked. They were desperate. They gave up one of their top prospects for a rental. The Mets gave up their center fielder, Pete Crow Armstrong. Now, I think he's out with an injury, but he is highly regarded. And he was like almost in the same breath as Jared Kelnick. So they gave up their top. I would say he's in the top three of their prospects. I want to profess to know that every single one of their prospects. But Pete Crow Armstrong is in their top five at least. They gave him up for a guy that they're going to have for 2 weeks, for 2 months. Well, hopefully it gets them a World Series, but that's a big price to pay.
Well, that's part of it, but, you know, everything that I've been reading and studying, Michael, Baez wants to be here. And if the Mets feel like that this can be a Lindor where they're comfortable bringing him back and paying him, and if he really likes the time here, getting a chance to play with Lindor, he's not going to be able to do it now for, you know, a couple of weeks before Lindor comes back. I'm just wondering whether this was we got a chance at it here. He's comfortable here, and now we've got an even better chance of bringing him back. If he was that hot, you could probably just sign him as a free agent, but maybe it just they felt that it was worth it because they're in first place, and they think there's a championship at the end of this.
I'll tell you what, Don. The Cubs could do the reverse Chapman now. They could sign Baez and get Pete Crow Armstrong. I mean, the Cubs weren't going anywhere anyway. They could sign Grizzo and the two players the Yankees gave him because they weren't going anything. They can sign every single guy that's on the last year of the contract back again if they so choose. Now, the Phillies could. Just got better, too. John Morosi is reporting that Kyle Gibson and Ian Kennedy going to the Phillies. So Ian Kennedy has been very, very good out of the bullpen for the Rangers, and now Kyle Gibson has had a very, very good season. I don't know how great of a pitcher he is, but he bolsters their starting rotation. And really, Don, the Phillies, you know, worst part about the Phillies is the fact that their bullpen is awful. Ian Kennedy has actually become a very good closer, so they get him, and he's reunited with Joe Girardi, and he started his career with the Yankees, so they know each other. Every team in the East, other than the Nationals, are making impressive moves, and even the trades that the Marlins made, they're building up a pitching staff that's outstanding.
Did you see Peter Boddy's tweet?
No.
You almost want to say, if the Phillies ever got Matt Harvey, they would have Lee, Harvey, Oswald, and Kennedy.
Wow.
Lee, Harvey, Oswald, Kennedy. And by the way, this is just big. The Nationals I heard just traded. They sent a couple of prospects away for a street cat, just a common street cat that they brought in.
Mark Feinstein reporting the Twins are trading Jay Happ to the Cardinals for left-handed pitcher Evan Sisk and right-handed pitcher John Gant. So it's happened fast and furious.
Yeah.
I'm really surprised the Mets gave up on Crow Armstrong. I really am.
Well, they know him, and they also know what they want. They want a chance to see where this goes. How often do you win a division if you're a Met fan? Seriously.
It hasn't been in a while.
You know, so even when they went to World Series in 2000, it was as a wild card. I mean, you got a chance to win a division with having a game one starter of the ilk of Jacob DeGrom and then possibly a guy that can, you know, pinch a clincher for you. I mean, you got to admire the idea going for it.
Now, you know what? Also, an unthought of thing, and I was just reminded of it by our good friend Incarcerated Bob. The Mets are playing the Reds starting tonight.
Oh, yeah.
The Reds hate Javi Baez because Javi Baez was the guy who took forever to get to first base when he got that hit against the Reds. So some residual anger there, blackout night today. I don't know if Baez will get there for tonight's game, but that adds a little more drama. So I wonder if Joe from Clark is happy now.
I think
look, you got they made a move. They got a pitcher and they got a second baseman.
See, that's why that phone call would have made more sense at 5 o'clock. Well, then at 3 o'clock.
Yeah, I know, because now you're practically complaining about how things have gone so far. You're not happy with the season thus far, and you have doubt that they're going to do anything when you have no reason to think that based on this new administration.
And also, I'm not hot on giving up top prospects. I get that that hurts. You know, but Schuster and I were talking about it last week when you were away, Michael. You know, you haven't won since 86. You're a first-place team right now. You're built to win now. You know, you get tired of just waiting for the next year. And when you got a chance to go for it, I think you got to try to have to go for it here. And I think they can make something happen. And you've got an owner now that can spend some money and get creative to where you don't always have to rely on your farm system to replenish. So it hurts, but sometimes you got to give to get. And obviously, if they don't win the division or get bounced early, it's going to look awful, especially if Baez doesn't re-sign. But God, you hate to miss an opportunity when it presents itself.
All right, so MLB Pipeline is saying that Crow Armstrong was the fifth prospect in the Mets' top 30. He was drafted 19th overall in the first round in 2020. He was the number 20th ranked prospect in all of the draft, according to MLB Pipeline. He got off to a solid start, but he suffered a torn labrum in his right shoulder after six games. So right shoulder is his non-throwing shoulder. That was in 2021. So the six games at Low A St. Lucie was good. Major shoulder surgery. So maybe, again, they know the medicals better than anybody. And maybe they just don't like, you know, what they see in the medicals and what happened in the surgery. But they gave away a first-round draft pick for the guy.
Right.
All right, so what happens with McNeil now?
I don't know. Is he used as a piece? Is he just going to have to be on the bench for the rest of this season, and we'll see what happens with Baez during the offseason? And then you've obviously got Cano coming back. You know, so you're eating money somewhere, right? I mean, you knew Cano was coming back. So was you just going to put him at second base because of all the money he was making, or you were going to be looking to replace him anyway? So it just sounds like there's a lot of money that's going to get thrown around here. So is he going to get dealt? Is he going to get dealt during the offseason? How is it all going to get reconfigured? I don't know. But as of right now, I guess either he or J.D. Davis or somebody sitting on a bench.
Anthony DiComo covers the Mets for MLB. Said, sounds like the Mets may not necessarily be done dealing today.
No.
Interesting. Let's talk about it. 1-800-919-3776. So we're ticking down to the 4 o'clock deadline. 42 minutes at this point. And we'll see what happens if the Yankees have another move up their sleeve, if the Mets have another move up their sleeve. But this is, I think, and Don could correct me, this is the most active trade deadline I have seen in years. I can't remember being this active and so many teams involved, too.
I'm sure I'll be reminded, Michael, but not only active, but having both the Mets and Yankees be buyers.
Right.
And making significant deals on the same day, pretty cool.
Michael Kasho on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by GEICO. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing GEICO's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Let's go to the phones. Anthony, Edgar is from New What? I don't have the second word there.
That would be New Rochelle.
New Rochelle. Edgar in New Rochelle. What's up, Edgar?
Yeah.
Edgar? Well, it's right. A long way from New Rochelle. Let's go to Eric in Jersey City. Eric?
Hey, guys. How you doing? I just want to give a little praise to Brian Cashman. I know you've done that somewhat today, but, you know, not only has he got the Cubs paying Rizzo and the Rangers paying Gallo, he's also got the Rangers paying Odor.
Yes.
So, you know, it's so typical, you know, the whining. And this is why we Yankee fans throw down how long we've been fans, because we don't want to be lumped in with the entitled people that Don always refers to. You know, Michael, you and I are similar age. We grew up rooting for Jerry Kenney and Horace Clark and those guys. Because, you know, typical Yankee response, Yankee fan response now is, we need left-handed hitting, we need defense. Well, we get left-handed hitting, and we get defense, and now they come back with, well, we need starting pitching. So it's never going to be good enough. Brian Cashman did a hell of a job yesterday.
You know, I would agree with you.
That's all I got.
Eric, I would agree with you. I think some fans would disagree because they're always looking for something to hate on. And, you know, the first 4 months of the season, has been a colossal disappointment to this point. It just has. So, you know, they'll all be on the bandwagon if this team makes a run. And if these deals don't work out where the team is not energized by these two guys, then they'll say, we told you so. So they're lurking. They can't lose. So as fans of that sort, if the deals work out, well, they're thrilled that their team won a World Series. And if it doesn't, then they were right, and they get to complain even more.
It's the Colin Cowherd, Carmelo Anthony will never win debate. It's like you put yourself out there, and as long as he doesn't win, you're right. So you're playing the percentages. Like the Yankees have to win a title, otherwise they're right. And listen, everything, no matter what you do, Michael, no championship's ever going to get guaranteed.
Right.
So if the Yankees make the playoffs, Michael, even if the Yankees make the World Series, if they don't win the championship, the anti-Cashman crowd is going to come out and say, wait a minute, the mission statement's championships, and we didn't win one.
Let's go to Zeke in Long Valley. What's up, Zeke?
Mikey, Don, Petey, how's it going, boys?
All good.
So just calling about, I guess you guys had said a couple times, you know, what are they going to do with Jeff McNeil now that we got Baez with the Mets? And I don't think that's the question. I think it's what are they going to do with J.D. Davis? Because I really think McNeil is so versatile. I mean, he can slide right over to third base. He can also play the outfield pretty well. J.D. Davis can play the outfield. I think it's just going to be a lot of moving pieces. I think, you know, Lindor is going to be out for at least another 2 weeks. You know, barring any setbacks, maybe he doesn't come back until September. So you need Baez at short for, you know, 2 weeks to a month anyway. I don't see the issue. I think, you know, these guys are going to split time. They're going to rotate at third base. McNeil could play the outfield. And I really think it's a great trade. And I think that everything is going to work out just fine with all the pieces they have. And if not, you know, somebody will probably get injured anyway. And, they'll be all the better for it.
I like the way you think. I mean, people usually do get injured, and these problems that we sit and pontificate about usually get solved on their own. Sometimes they don't. But how could you complain about a deal? I mean, Pete Crow Armstrong, whatever becomes of him. But you got Javi Baez. Javi Baez is a hell of a player. The Mets have just really improved, and they didn't lose anybody off their major league roster. They lost a lottery ticket. Now, it was a good lottery ticket, but that's all they lost. And they're looking right now. What are we going to do right now? What can we do right now? So Pete Crow Armstrong is at low A. He's 3 or 4 years away before he even becomes a Met, if he became a Met. And you never know what young players ever. I said it earlier. But I like a deal like that, even giving up a highly thought of prospect. If you have the guy for a little bit longer, I don't think you're keeping Javi Baez beyond 2 months. But if you get a World Series out of it, what do you care?
Having a bench of Pilar and Davis, there's nothing wrong with that.
I mean,
nope. It's temporary. Well, and then obviously when Lindor comes back, it's just guys that are going to be able to come off the bench and help. And if you have any injuries, look at the guys that have played. How many guys do they have on IR early in the season?
Mm-hmm.
Where VR's had to play and Pilar's had to be out in the outfield every single day. So he's right. Having depth is not a problem. Now, obviously, get into next year, and if they do keep Baez and with Cano, they'll have some bodies they have to move around. But right now, there's nothing wrong with having extra bodies.
Now, breaking down, Kyle Glasser broke down Javi Baez's last 150 games. Hit .230 with 206 strikeouts and 22 walks. But he hit 30 home runs, 89 ribbies, 16 stolen bases in 19 attempts. And he's an electric player, gives a lot of excitement, provides a jolt to the team. So, yeah, you're going to get strikeouts out of Baez, but, boy, can he play short. Now, he's not going to be the shortstop for the Mets when Lindor comes back. But if he can play short, he certainly could play second.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, so in the middle of the baseball trade deadline approaching, the NBA draft was last night. And the top of the draft was as you expected, and then we wondered what the Knicks and the Nets would do. And I think the Knicks had a very productive night. So they had the 19th and the 21st pick in the first round. And they did some trading, and they added an additional one and a second, and then they traded to 25 in their trades, and they got the player that they wanted. In fact, they got Quentin Grimes and Miles McBride, two guys that they would have been comfortable at 19 and 21, and they get McBride in the second round. They get Grimes with the 25th pick. And now the Knicks, if you want to look to the future, they have six potential first-round picks over the next 4 years. And with free agency starting next week, they have $50 to $60 million in cap space, and they have a lot of young talent that they could build around. So I thought it was a pretty good night for the Knicks, starting out with the 19 and 21st pick. And the 25th pick of the draft after their maneuvering was Quentin Grimes. If you don't know, he's a 6'4" guard out of University of Houston. He can defend. He can shoot the three. He averaged 17.6 points and shot 40.4% from the three after he transferred from Kansas. And Quentin joins us now on the show. Quentin, it's Michael, Don, and Peter. How you doing?
Yeah, how you doing?
We're doing great. So were you surprised that the Knicks selected you, or did you have a sense that they were interested in you?
I kind of got a sense after I had a really good workout with them. And then I think after that workout, my agents and then they were in heavy talks about the pick. And then on draft night, I kind of got the word about 2 weeks before that the Knicks were going to take me. And I was just super excited to join the Knicks organization.
What was last night like for you? Take us through the night in general.
Man, it was surreal just watching the draft with my family and close friends. Yesterday was like the first day. I was actually anxious and nervous about what was going to happen about the whole draft leading up to the experience. And then once I heard what my agent pulled me to the side and I got on the phone with the Knicks front office and they told me they were going to pick me, my heart just kind of my stomach just dropped down, just kind of just felt a sign of relief. And then once I seen my name come across the screen, it was just all the emotions just started to let out. And I had just tears running down my face the whole night.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, I keep reading about it, and you just said it, that you had a good workout. So, Quentin, please take us through what that workout is like and what makes it a good workout. What did you do there? What did they ask you to do that impressed them? Because at one point, like a couple of weeks ago, people said, well, you're probably going to be a second-round pick, and that workout catapulted you into the first round. So tell me about that workout with the Knicks.
Yeah, the Knicks, their workout was definitely the hardest one I had for sure, but like you say, you're going into a workout, they already know you're a shooter. It doesn't matter if you make or miss shots. They want to see who's going to go out there and compete extremely hard at a high level. And I feel like that's what I did. From when we played 3-on-3, to competing defensively, competing offensively, leading our teams to the wins, even in the quick 3-on-3 scrimmages that we had. They want to see who's going to go out there and compete at the hardest, because that's what Knicks fans love. That's what Coach Thibodeau wants from all his players. And I feel like I did that at a really high level. And I feel like I really stood out in my workout.
So who's guarding you, Quentin, during this workout? I mean, who are you going up against defensively and then shooting the ball?
Yeah, it was me, Jaden Springer, Josh Primo, and Kessel Edwards, like the main guys I was going up against in like the 2-on-2, 1-on-1. And we were competing at a really high level. I shot the ball really good that day as well. So I feel like I had one of my best workouts and performed at a really high level in front of the whole front office, and it definitely paid off.
What were your impressions of Thibodeau?
Man, he's a tough, hard-nosed head coach. Even when I was talking to him in the meetings, I really liked him. I feel like we connected for sure right away. He definitely got some similarities to Coach Sampson. It's definitely going to be on you to expect nothing but perfection. And that's what you want from a coach, to hold you accountable every day in practice, because my ultimate goal in my whole NBA career is to win the NBA championship. And I feel like we got to definitely bring that back to the city of New York.
All right, so how do you think you fit onto this Knicks team? You know the names that are there now, and as you heard when I introduced you, they have $50 to $60 million to spend in cap space. So how do you think you fit in?
I feel like I fit in great. I know 3 to 4 out of 5 guys on the team already. And I feel like, you know, I already have a relationship. I feel like I'm a really good shooter who can even get better as well. Like a defender who can face the floor and the players for not only myself, but for others as well. So I feel like I'm going to hopefully have an immediate intake right away, hopefully do big things for the city.
What are your impressions of New York and playing at Madison Square Garden?
Yeah, it's a mecca of all meccas, the MSG. It's where everybody comes to put on a performance. So not only people come to your home court, they come to have their best game as well. So you got to bring your A game 110%. So I'm just looking forward to being locked in every single game. You're going to bring the stars out no matter who you play. So I feel like it's going to be every night. It's going to be the game to watch, the game to be on TV.
When you were a kid and you'd be outside playing ball with your friends, who was the player you pretended to be?
Man, I pretended I was Kobe Bryant. That's why the kind of the main reason I wear number 24. And just watching him, like when I was growing up, he was a guy of the Lakers, coming to 5-5 rings. I would watch his old tape when he was with him and Shaq, just how competitive he was. That's kind of the guy I watch even like 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm watching his film, his footwork. So that's the guy that I just idolize in my driveway, hitting like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, just hitting that game when it shot like him.
Was his passing hard on you as a fan?
He said, well, yeah, it definitely was. It was kind of crazy when we heard about it. We heard it. He actually got the news during one of our games. Mm. We learned about it at halftime. It's kind of hard for really the rest of the game to even be played, just knowing that it was heavy on our mind. But something I definitely learned to play with him. So I'm definitely going to pick his brain about just kind of what he told him. Hopefully he'll pass that down to me, and I can continue his legacy about what he tried to instill in Julius Randle into somebody else. But it was definitely a hard day when I heard about that.
Before we let you go, Quentin, have you heard from any Knicks since you were drafted?
Yeah, I spoke to RJ and Emmanuel. They DM me. They're telling me congrats, welcome to the team, and like, let's get you to work. Reggie Bullock, we have the same agent. So we kind of already called me last night talking about something, just like super excited for me. So like, I feel like we're going to be building something real special in the Knicks.
Well, congratulations.
I just want one more, Michael. Quentin, your half-brother, Tyler Myers, plays in the NHL with the Vancouver Canucks. It's the first time ever brothers have played in the NBA and the NHL at the same time. How cool is that, and what is your relationship with him? Are you guys close?
Yeah, we definitely is. It's surreal just to know that we're the first to have a brother in NHL and a brother in the NBA. So my mom got bragging rights on my dad that she's the main athlete of the family. But, yeah, he's been super supportive of me even through high school when he knew I was getting all my accolades and down to American. I try to catch his games on TV. So, yeah, we definitely keep in touch. We're kind of just always trying to just stay in touch and kind of congratulate each other as much as we can, support each other as much as we can, even though we don't get to see each other that much.
Quentin, congratulations. You're a New York Knick. That's kind of cool, I'm sure, for you to hear, and we look forward to watching you play at Madison Square Garden.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks, Quentin.
Good luck.
You got it. Man, I mean, you see the kids, and you said, you know, he was crying. I mean, this realizes a dream. They dream about that moment to get selected, and you know, he in 6 weeks he pushed himself up from a second round pick to a first round pick, and it's a legitimate first round pick that the Knicks would have felt comfortable at 19 or 21. That's how much they like this guy. So that's why their maneuvers. They got another first round pick, another second round pick. They got a stash pick, and they cleared some money as well. So they did okay. They did okay. I mean, it's not the big splash that Knick fans want, but when you're not in the lottery, which is good, they weren't in the lottery the first time in 8 years.
Right.
They actually selected a guy that's gonna have a chance to really help them.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
No, we kind of touched on this yesterday, and after we got off the regular show, and then we filled in for tornado-bound Chris Carlin, it came down that the Yankees got Anthony Rizzo. I think it's a great trade. I think both of the trades they made, even for young players to me are so fungible. I mean, yeah, there's the guys that can't miss, that you know can't miss, like a Juan DeFranco, and he's even struggling in his first month in the big leagues. But everybody else, it's a flip of the coin. You never know who's going to make it. This isn't like basketball or football. I mean, the top draft pick might not make it. We've seen it many, many times in this sport. And the Yankees did not give up any high-end prospects to get Gallo, and they did give up higher-end prospects to get Rizzo, which kept them away from the Red Sox as well. But I look at it this way. Yankee fans were calling us up and saying, you should break it up. I said that was never going to happen. This is a team that will never break it up. It just won't. Even when they looked like they were breaking it up by trading their two top relievers, they still persevered. They had enough. They brought other people in, and they made a run. But I look at it this way. I don't know if you guys agree with me. The Yankees are not trying to make the playoffs with these trades. The Yankees are trying to win the World Series. Yankees, I think they're getting into the playoffs. They think they're going to get one of the wild cards. So these moves are big enough that these aren't tweaks to make a run at the A's. These are tweaks to win the wild card game and then go to the World Series. And so many Yankee fans don't like Brian Cashman. I've never understood it. You know, they'll keep saying, well, we haven't won a championship since 2009. Well, the Mets haven't won one since 1986. I can name a lot of teams that haven't won one since 2009. Unfortunately, Red Sox are one of those teams that have won several since then. I get it. I get the upset. But what Brian Cashman has done with these deals, to me, is mind-boggling. He got the Texas Rangers to pay the remainder of Gallo's contract. He got the Chicago Cubs to pick up the remaining $6 million on Anthony Rizzo's contract. And all he gave up were fungible assets. Of those six players that they gave up, think about it. How many do you think are going to be absolute stars? I would bet zero. I could be wrong. One of them could just be a breakthrough case and become an absolute star. But what he has done, working under what is obviously a cap, his owner said, you're not going over 210. No, not after I spent $250 million last year and we did nothing. You're not doing it. He's working under those constraints and the ability to pull off those two deals. And you can argue all you want whether you think this Yankee team is good enough. And we'll get into it as we go along. But I will tell you this. They are immeasurably better than they were before they made these deals. What was the one complaint about the Yankees? They don't play good defense. And
no lefty bats.
They're too right-handed, right? Yeah. Now they picked up two plus defenders, two left-handed bats. One of the left-handed bats, Anthony Rizzo, he's hard to counteract because he has reverse splits. He owns left-handers. Hits well over 300 against left-handers and has actually struggled against righties. And he has 14 home runs. And somebody did the legwork that if in fact he played every single one of his games this year at Yankee Stadium, he'd have 22. He'd have eight more home runs. So they have gotten immeasurably better, enough to knock off the White Sox, enough to knock off the Astros, enough to knock off the Red Sox. Time will tell. But hope is a currency as well. And I think that if you're a rational Yankee fan, I don't know if Don and Peter agree, the Yankee front office is now giving the Yankee fans hope. Because I know tonight, Yankees-Marlins, the game's going to be on PIX 11, the pregame's at 6:30 on YES. That's going to be one of the highest-rated games of the year. People are going to tune in. They want to see this. They want to see what this looks like. They have given them the currency of hope, and the last month or so, they have not been dealing in that currency because there have been so many gut punches and letdowns and things like that. I think that Cashman and his crew deserve to be applauded because they have always made good trade deadline deals. You want to complain about Brian? The team is too top-heavy analytic. They're too stringent in the things they do. The line of order from the top to the bottom, it's too rigid. You could say all that, and you could actually make the case that it's disturbing. But you can't say they don't know how to make deals. Even when he first became a GM, getting David Justice, players like that, he knows what to do at the trade deadline to help this team. And I believe, Don and Peter, they are not making these changes to make the playoffs. They're making these change-ups. These changes to win the World Series.
And now you got to do it. Now with Gallo, you got another year.
Yep.
And I do like the idea with Hicks coming back that you can have an outfield of Gallo, Hicks, and Judge. But for Rizzo, it's about this year. So all the things you said are nice, Michael. If they miss the playoffs or get beat in the wild card, then it was all for nothing. Because Rizzo's gone. I think Rizzo's going to go back to Chicago. So there is that risk. So you have to know then in order for this to work, even if Rizzo hits 500, Michael, and hits 20 home runs in the final 60 games of the season, it's going to be judged on whether they make the playoffs or not. Okay, oh, yeah. I said Gallo's a little bit different just based upon the fact that you do have him controllable for next year. But, you know, there'll be the anti-Yankee fan, the anti-Cashman fan, I should say. It's going to say, well, if he built the team the right way originally, we wouldn't have to be making all these deals and giving up all these prospects. But look what the Dodgers are doing. And look what the Dodgers have been doing over the last few years, too, of trying to go for it and win. So they didn't go over the threshold. They didn't give up. They gave up one prospect that was rated at the beginning of the season in the top 10. I think you said yesterday one of them was, like, ranked ninth.
Right.
And you're giving yourself an excellent chance to get in there. And why even say that you can't even catch the Red Sox? Because stranger things have happened. You've put yourself in a position to contend. So if you still were that outlier that thought they were going to blow it up and that Cashman was going to get fired at the end of the year, well, sorry, they've retooled and now they're going for it. So if you know that, then get on board, because now they're going to really try to make these last 60 games something that's going to be a lot of fun.
It's an interesting change for a deadline, too. And granted, I'm not as familiar about probably the MLB deadline as others, but like this goes, would you guys say this goes slightly beyond them adding a piece?
Yes.
This is basically changing without having to lose anything. They have fundamentally changed the core of this team to some degree, no?
Without spending another dime, which makes it all the more remarkable.
Yeah, that's the thing. Now, listen, if these guys disappoint for some reason and they don't live up to the back of their card, then Yankees fans will be mad as ever. But the way I'm looking at it is they didn't spend a ton of money. They didn't give up anything anyone's attached to. And you added two major stars to this team? It's pretty crazy.
Now, I want to do a preemptive strike here, if you guys will let me.
Go ahead.
So we've been killing the way the Yankees are playing. Killing them. You know, the team poorly constructed, too right-handed, blah, blah, blah. We pointed out everything that they've done wrong up to this point. So let's say that these moves that they've made, even picking up the relief pitchers that they have, actually gets them over the hump. And they get into the playoffs, they make a run, and it's exciting. They can't come back at the people that criticized them and said, you guys are all wrong, bunch of blowhards, you were wrong. No. Because if we were wrong, then you wouldn't have to make these deals. You had to make these deals because we were right. This is a fundamentally flawed team that you have now greatly improved by actually fixing the major flaw. So there are no pounding of the chest if the Yankees make it from their front office. See, we were right. No, you weren't right from the beginning because this team was bad.
Right. You had to go out and get two players that no one would have foreseen them getting for this team to potentially perform.
Can I play Brian Cashman?
Sure.
Go ahead.
All right. And I think I'll do it in less words and more entertaining.
Wow.
Hey, we lost Hicks. Hey, Voit was not healthy. You know, maybe we're not making these moves if Voit was healthy and bashing home runs like he did last year. Maybe we're not making these moves if Voit didn't get hurt and he's out in center field. We wouldn't have Brett Gardner playing every single day. We wouldn't be messing around with our infield trying to figure everything out. You know, so, and I'm not defending him, Michael. I'm just saying that would probably be the retort. He's making these moves because he didn't have Hicks, who they love, and also because he's a switch hitter, would be the lefty bat that they're missing, and Voit, who hit 20 home runs and led the league last year. That would be his retort.
Yeah, and it's still an incomplete team because it's still, again, I have used, and I've gotten attacked on Twitter for it, I've used the Hicks argument. But, I mean, if all of your eggs are in the Hicks basket, he's never healthy. And maybe they were wrong to give him $70 million for 7 years. So we'll see. We'll see, because when we were criticizing, we weren't criticizing them at the beginning of the year. I actually said this team was going to go to the World Series, so I was actually factoring in Hicks and Voit, and we were criticizing them when those guys were not there. So we got it right, and I think they realized exactly what's wrong with this team. Now, they didn't make it that much more athletic, although Joey Gallo is more athletic than a lot of the home run hitters they have. He's a good defender, and Rizzo's a great defender, so we shall see. Now, over the next hour and a half, what do they do with Luke Voit? Because you're dealing now, from a weakness. You got Anthony Rizzo. There's no place to play Voit. So you're going to give a guy who led the majors in home runs last year with 22 away. I don't think they will, because even if he doesn't trade him, keep him and just have him for that right-handed bat off the bench. Now, it's not fair to him because this is a lineup that now will not be pinch hit for at all. But how about this? You force Giancarlo Stanton to play left field. And then Luke Voit's your DH. Then that's a pretty damn good lineup if you don't trade Voit. And then, if in fact Stanton gets hurt out there, then Voit's your permanent DH and you use somebody else out in the outfield to play center field. Now, one other thing that this deal for Rizzo does, I think it takes the Yankees out of the story, sweepstakes. Where do you put them? You'd have no place to put him unless you traded Gleyber Torres in the deal. You'd have no place to put him. If you played him at short and moved Gleyber Torres to second, then DJ LeMahieu wouldn't play. Now, another guy who is the odd man out here is Rougned Odor. He becomes a spot starter at best because DJ LeMahieu is now your everyday second baseman. Rizzo's your everyday first baseman. Torres is your everyday shortstop, and Urshela is your everyday third baseman. Now, obviously, things could go wrong, injuries could happen, and he finds his way back in the lineup. But as of this point, a guy who's been one of their better players is now a non-player, a spot starter at best. So Boone has some maneuvering to do. I'm very intrigued, and we'll give it to you as soon as we get it, to see what the Yankee lineup's going to be against the Marlins. Where will Gallo bat? Where will Rizzo bat? What will John Sterling's home run calls be for those guys?
I had a raunchy suggestion on Twitter today.
Veal cutlet.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.